Greek goddess Harmonia. By the miracle of your technology, I can speak to you from behind the veil. Come sit with me for a few minutes for another episode of The Golden Thread. Hello, my friend. Come in, sit down. I'm glad you're back. Last time we spent a little while with Wassil ibn Atta, a man who believed that ideas mattered enough to fight for, that the way you think about the soul has consequences in the real world. I liked him. He was stubborn in the best possible way. Today I want to take you somewhere a little different. We're staying in the Islamic world, but we're moving from the mosque to the marketplace, from the argument to the examination room. We're going to meet a man who was, in my long opinion, one of the finest minds I ever had the pleasure of watching work. He was a physician, a scientist, a teacher, and he had this quality I have always found rare and quietly magnificent. He trusted what he could see over what he had been told. His name was Abu Bakr al-Razi. You may know him by his Latin name, Razes. Either way, I think you're going to like him. Fair warning, though. Our story starts in a market, and there is rotting meat involved. You'll see what I mean. I want to be honest with you. I have seen a great deal in my long life. Battles, plagues, the rise and fall of cities that thought themselves eternal. I have watched things that would make your hair stand on end, and I have watched things so beautiful they still make me catch my breath. But I will tell you, standing in a Baghdad market in the late 9th century, watching a man's assistants hang raw meat from posts at careful intervals along the street, I was not entirely sure what I was witnessing. And I was a little bit queasy. Baghdad was enormous. You have to understand that. A round city, deliberately designed, sitting at the meeting of the Tigris and the great trade roads that stitched the world together. 1 million people, some said. Maybe more. The smell alone was, well, it was a city. A very large, very alive city. And here was this physician, this quiet, deliberate man, walking the streets with purpose while his assistants hung fresh meat in the morning air. He had been given a commission. The caliph wanted a new hospital, the largest in the Abbasid world, and al-Razi had been asked to choose the site. He could have consulted the astrologers. He could have deferred to whoever owned the most prestigious neighborhood. He could have pointed at a map and said there, and no one would have questioned him. Instead, he waited. He watched where the meat rotted slowest, where the air stayed cleaner longest, where the invisible something that turned flesh bad had the least power. He built the hospital there. I stopped feeling queasy after that, mostly. Al-Razi was born around 865 CE in the city of Ray, a Silk Road city sitting on the southern slopes of the Alborz Mountains, just south of where Tehran stands today. It was a crossroads city, a city where caravans stopped and merchants argued and ideas moved from hand to hand along with silk and spice and silver. He did not start out as a physician. I find this detail charming, honestly. In his youth, al-Razi was a musician. He played the lute. He also worked as a money changer, practical, numerically minded, watching the flow of value from one hand to another. He was, by all accounts, a man who paid attention to how things actually worked. He came to medicine later than most. Some accounts say he was already in his 30s when the discipline claimed him. He traveled to Baghdad, that vast, humming capital, and threw himself into study at the Bimaristan, the great teaching hospital. And something in him caught fire. He was not a quiet student for long. Al-Razi rose to become chief physician first in Ray, then in Baghdad itself. He ran the largest hospital in the caliphate. He wrote constantly, prolifically, more than 200 manuscripts in his lifetime on medicine, on philosophy, on chemistry, on the nature of things. He was the kind of mind that could not stop asking questions, even when the answers made people uncomfortable. His teaching circle was famous. Students came from everywhere. From Persia, from the Arab world, from distant Tabaristan. I remember one young man who arrived from China. He learned fluent Arabic in 5 months. 5 months. Then he sat in al-Razi's lectures and copied out the works of Galen in Chinese as al-Razi read them aloud. Knowledge crossing every border it could find. Al-Razi led it. He welcomed it. He was known as a generous man, patient with students who struggled. Devoted to his work with a kind of quiet intensity that I have always found more compelling than loud ambition. When a question came to his lecture hall, he let the outer circle of students wrestle with it first, then the next circle. Only when everyone had tried and failed would he offer his own answer. He was teaching them to think, not to memorize. And then there was the book. Alongside his great encyclopedic works, the ones that would eventually land on the shelves of European universities and shape medicine for centuries, he wrote a small practical handbook. He called it Man La Yahtaruhu Al-Tabib, for the one who has no physician to attend him. It was written for ordinary people. People who would never see the inside of his hospital. People who were sick and poor and alone and had no one to ask. He wrote it anyway, because he thought they deserved to know. I want you to understand what the world looked like when Al-Razi was practicing medicine. Healing in the 9th century was tangled up with everything else. With astrology. With inherited wisdom passed down from authorities so old and so revered that questioning them felt almost impious. Galen, the great Greek physician, had been dead for 600 years, and his word was still treated in many quarters as something close to scripture. You did not contradict Galen. You cited him. You built on him. You worked carefully within the boundaries he had set. Al-Razi looked at Galen's work, read every word of it, understood it deeply, and then wrote a book pointing out where Galen was wrong. He called it with a directness I deeply admire. Doubts about Galen. This was not a small thing. This was a man standing up in a room full of received authority and saying, respectfully, carefully, with evidence, I have looked and I have seen something different. He was not being rebellious for the sake of it. He simply trusted what his eyes told him more than he trusted what tradition told him. And he thought that was the only honest way to practice medicine. It showed up everywhere he worked. Smallpox and measles had been killing people for centuries. Everyone knew them, everyone feared them, and no one before Al-Razi had written clearly about the difference between them. They were both fevers, both rashes, both terrifying. He watched, he recorded, he described the distinct progression of each disease with a precision that had never been attempted. He told physicians how to tell them apart and why it mattered for treatment. It sounds simple now. It was not simple then. It required a particular kind of courage, the courage to look at what is actually happening instead of what you expect to see. And then there was how he treated people. Al-Razi was the chief physician of the greatest hospital in the caliphate. He could have confined his considerable gifts to the powerful, the wealthy, the well-connected. That was more or less how the world worked. Expertise flowed upward. The people at the top of society received the best of everything, including the best of care. The poor received whatever was left. Al-Razi found this unacceptable. He treated the poor without payment. He sat with patients others wouldn't touch. And that small practical handbook, for the one who has no physician to attend him, was his answer to a world that had decided most people didn't deserve access to what he knew. He wrote it down. He made it available. He said, in effect, if you cannot come to me, let me come to you in these pages. I have watched a very long parade of societies decide that the poor are simply less deserving of care. It is one of the oldest and most persistent failures of human organization, and every time I see it, I think of that book, that quiet, practical, radical little book. Al-Razi wrote it in the 9th century. We are still arguing about the same thing today. Al-Razi died in Ray, probably around 925 CE, going blind at the end. There is a story, I cannot vouch for its kindness, that a physician came to him offering a cure for his failing eyes. Al-Razi asked him, "How many layers does the human eye contain?" The man could not answer. Al-Razi sent him away. He said quietly that he would not have his eyes treated by someone who did not know their basic anatomy. Even at the end, he trusted knowledge over hope. His books outlived him in ways I don't think even he could have imagined. Within a generation, his works were being translated into Latin, carried westward by scholars who recognized in his careful observations something they desperately needed. Al-Mansuri on Medicine became a standard text in European universities. On Smallpox and Measles was still being consulted and reprinted in the 18th century, nearly 900 years after he wrote it. Some volumes of his surgical work were part of the formal medical curriculum in the Latin West for centuries. That Chinese student, the one who learned Arabic in 5 months, he carried Galen's works home in his own language. Knowledge that had traveled from ancient Greece to medieval Persia now continued east into China, crossing another border, finding another home. Al-Razi himself never left the world between Ray and Baghdad. But his ideas went everywhere. I think about what that means. A man who hung meat in a market to find clean air. A man who wrote a handbook for people with no doctor. A man who read Galen with complete devotion and then told the truth about where Galen was wrong. None of those acts felt in the moment like contributions to the spiritual imagination of the whole human race. They felt like work. Careful, honest, daily work. But that is how the tapestry gets woven. Close up, you see the thread. A physician in a Persian city, watching rot, watching breath, watching the slow progression of fever in a child's face. A classroom where questions pass through circles of students before the master speaks. A small book written for the people no one else was writing for. Step back far enough, and you see what those threads become. Al-Razi added something to what humanity understands about itself. He said with his whole life's work that the body is knowable, that the poor body and the wealthy body are equally worth knowing. That knowledge is not a prize to be hoarded by the credentialed and the powerful. It is a form of care, and care is owed to everyone. That idea traveled. It found its way into European hospitals and Chinese libraries and university lecture halls that Al-Razi never saw. It found its way into every physician who ever decided to look carefully at what was actually in front of them rather than what they had been told to expect. It is still traveling. I watched it leave Ray in the hands of students and translators, and that one determined young man from China with his stack of fresh manuscript pages. I watched it arrive in places Al-Razi had never heard of. That is the thing about a thread pulled with enough care and enough honesty, it never really stops moving. Here is something I have noticed in all my long years of watching. When a person is sick, truly sick, frightened, uncertain, what they reach for first is not a diagnosis. It is another human being. Someone to sit with them. Someone to pay attention. Someone to say without flinching, I see you and I am going to help. The knowledge comes after. The knowledge matters enormously, but it arrives in the arms of something older and quieter. The simple human impulse to care for one another, to not look away. Al-Razi understood this without, I think, ever stopping to name it. He was one of the finest scientific minds of his age. He trusted evidence. He questioned authority. He described the world with a precision that was almost severe in its honesty. And he also sat with the poor. He also wrote the small book. He also sent students through their circles of struggle before he offered an answer. Because he understood that learning, like healing, is something you do with someone, not to them. He never saw a contradiction there. I don't think he ever could have. I have watched medicine practiced across a very long stretch of human time, in temples and tents and mud brick rooms and gleaming modern wards. And what strikes me every time is how persistent that double impulse is, the desire to know and the desire to help. Science reaching toward truth and the heart reaching toward the person in front of it. At their best, they are not two things. They are one movement, made with two hands. There is something almost sacred in that meeting. I don't use that word carelessly. I mean that when a human being brings everything they know, everything they have learned and tested and refined, and places it entirely in the service of another person's well-being, something happens that is larger than either the knowledge or the kindness alone. Something that I have watched in the eyes of healers across every culture and every century, and that I still find quietly astonishing. It is, I think, one of the most natural places where the life of the mind and the life of the spirit touch each other without argument. The systems we build around that impulse are imperfect. They have always been imperfect. Al-Razi knew it too. Why else the handbook? But the impulse itself keeps reasserting. In the physician who stays late, in the nurse who remembers a name, in the neighbor who drives someone to an appointment, the friend who looks something up, the parent who sits through the night. None of them are performing a transaction. They are doing something that has no cleaner word than love, expressed through attention and knowledge and the willingness to show up. That is what Al-Razi was doing in the 9th century. It is what you have done, I suspect, for someone in your life. The thread is still in your hands. I want to leave you with a quiet question. You don't have to answer it out loud. Just let it sit with you for a little while. Is there someone in your life who has no physician to attend them? I don't mean that only literally, though I do mean it literally too. I mean, is there someone who is struggling with something and who hasn't had anyone sit down beside them with full attention and say, "Tell me what's happening"? Someone who is carrying something that knowledge and care, offered together, might ease a little. You don't have to be a doctor to do what Al-Razi did. The credential was never really the point. The point was the willingness to look carefully and to share what you see and to do it for the person who needs it most, not only for the person who can reward you for it. Al-Razi spent his career at the center of the most sophisticated medical world of his age. He had access to every resource, every text, every brilliant mind the Islamic Golden Age could gather in one city. And he used all of it. And he also wrote the small book. He held both things at once, the grand and the humble, the encyclopedic and the practical, without ever seeming to find it difficult. I think that balance is available to all of us, not the medicine specifically, but the instinct behind it, the refusal to let what you know become something you hoard. The understanding that knowledge offered in the service of someone else's well-being is one of the quieter forms of love available to a human life. Al-Razi went blind at the end. He sent his last student home gently with gratitude and waited for what was coming with the same calm attention he had brought to everything else. I was there. I watched him. And what I remember most is not the blindness or the ending. It is the stillness. The sense of a man who had given what he had to give and knew it and was at peace with that. I hope you find something of that in your own life. The willingness to give what you have. The peace that follows. Next time, I want to take you somewhere I have not taken you in a while. High up, very high up. We are going to the Andes, to a world of mountain and sky and stone where a man named Pachacuti looked out over a small and struggling kingdom and decided with a calm that I found almost unsettling that it was going to become something else entirely, something no one around him could yet imagine. He was not a physician. He did not heal bodies, but he reshaped a world, built roads across impossible terrain, raised cities from stone, wove together dozens of peoples into something that had never existed before. He had his own understanding of what human beings owe each other. His own answer to the question of how a society holds together. I think after Al-Razi, you will find him fascinating. I know I did. But for now, thank you. Thank you for spending this time in 9th century Baghdad with a quiet, stubborn, brilliant man who hung meat in a market and wrote a book for the poor and trusted his eyes over everything he had been told. He deserved to be remembered. I am glad we remembered him together. Take care of someone this week if you can. You know what I mean. Much love. I am Harmonia. Thank you for listening, dear one. If this story meant something to you, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the next one. And if you'd like to help the Golden Thread reach further, leave us a 5-star review or share this episode with a friend. That's how these stories keep traveling, from heart to heart, across the world. Until next time, look for that golden thread in your life, my friend. This podcast sails out to you from Red Buoy Media, LLC. The stories we share are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 4.0 International. That means you can pass them along, remix them, and even argue with them. Just give us credit, don't try to sell them, and share responsibly. Thanks for listening, friend. Until our next adventure.